The Iranian lay completely still, not breathing, no visible pulse, no signs of life. The standard first aid remedies taught by the Army medics were artificial respiration and external chest compressions, 80 beats a minute, as long as it took. But Reacher's personal rule of thumb was never to revive a guy who had just pulled a gun on him. He was fairly inflexible on the matter. So he let nature take its course for a minute, and then he helped it along a little with heavy pressure from his finger and thumb on the big arteries in the guy's neck. 4 minutes without oxygen to the brain was reckoned to be the practical limit. Reacher gave it 5, just to be certain, squatting there, looking around, listening hard. No one reacted. No one came. The Iranian died, the slack tensions of deep unconsciousness fading away, the absolute soft limpness of recent death replacing them. Reacher stood up and found the car key and picked up the Glock. The key was marked with the Chevrolet stove bolt logo, but it wasn't for the blue car. Reacher stabbed the unlock button and nothing happened. The Glock was close to new and fully loaded, 17 bright 9mm parabellums in the magazine and one in the chamber. Reacher put it in his pocket with his screwdrivers. He walked back to the front lot and tried again with the key. A yellow Chevy Malibu answered him. It flashed all 4 of its turn signals and unlocked all 4 of its doors. It was new and plain and clean, an obvious rental. He got in and pushed the seat back and started it up. The tank was close to full. There were rental papers in the door pocket, dated that day and made out to a Las Vegas corporation under a name that communicated nothing. There were bottles of water in the cup holders, one part used, one unopened. Reacher backed out of the slot and drove around to the back of the H and stopped with the dead guy between the wall and the car. He found the remote button and popped the trunk. He got out and checked the space. It was not a very big opening, and not a very big trunk. But then, the Iranian was not a very big guy. Reacher bent down and went through the Iranian's pockets. He found a phone and a knife and a wallet and a handkerchief and about $1 in coins. He left the coins and stripped the battery out of the phone and put the battery back in one of the dead guy's pockets and the rest of the phone in another. The knife was a switchblade with a pearl handle, heavy, solid, and sharp, a decent implement. He put it in his own pocket with his adjustable wrench. He checked the wallet. It held close to $400 in cash plus 3 credit cards plus a driver's license from the state of Nevada made out to a guy named Oscar Arad Saper at a Las Vegas address. The photograph was plausible. The credit cards were in the same name. The cash was mostly 20s, crisp and fresh and fragrant, straight from an ATM. Reacher kept the cash and wiped the wallet with the handkerchief and put it back in the dead guy's pocket. Then he hoisted him up, 2 hands, collar and belt, and turned and made ready to fold him into the yellow Malibu's trunk. Then he stopped. He got a better idea. He carried the guy over to Seth Duncan's Cadillac and laid him gently on the ground. He found the Cadillac key in his pocket and opened the trunk and picked the guy up again and put him inside. An old-fashioned turnpike cruiser. A big trunk. Plenty of space. He closed the lid on the guy. He opened the driver's door and used the handkerchief to wipe everything he had touched that day. The wheel, the gear shift, the mirror, the radio knobs, the door handles inside and out. Then he blipped the remote and locked up again and walked away, back to the Malibu. It was yellow, but apart from that, it was fairly anonymous. Domestic brand, local plates, conventional shape. Probably less conspicuous out on the open road than the Cadillac, despite the garish color, and probably less likely to be reported stolen. Out-of-state guys with guns and knives in their pockets generally kept a lot quieter than outraged local citizens. He checked left, checked right, checked behind, checked ahead. All quiet. Just cold air and silence and stillness and a night mist falling. He got back in the Malibu and kept the headlights off and turned around and nosed slowly out of the lot. He drove the length of McNally Street and paused. To the left was I-80, 60 miles south, a fast six-lane highway, a straight shot east all the way to Virginia. To the right were the 40 farms and the Duncans and the Apollo Inn and Eleanor and the doctor and his wife and Dorothy Coe, all of them, 60 miles north. Decision time. Left or right? South or north? He flicked the headlights on and turned right and headed back north. Chapter 33. The Duncans had moved from Jonas Duncan's kitchen to Jasper's because Jasper still had a mostly full bottle of Knob Creek in his cupboard. All four men were around the table, elbow to elbow, amber half inches of bourbon and thick chipped glasses set out in front of them. They were sipping slow and talking low. Their latest shipment was somewhere between 12 and 24 hours away, usually a time for celebration, like the night before Christmas. But this time they were a little subdued. Jonas asked,
"Where do you suppose it is right now?"
"Parked up for the night," Jacob said. "At least I hope so. Close to the border, but waiting for daylight. Prudence is the key now."
500 miles, Jonas said. "Crossing time plus 10 hours, maybe? Plus contingencies?"
Jasper asked, "How long do you suppose it takes to read a police file?"
"Good question," Jacob said. "I've been giving it a little thought, naturally. It must be a very big file, and it must be stored away somewhere. Let's say government workers start at 9 a.m. Let's say they quit at 5. Let's say there's some measure of bureaucracy involved in gaining access to the file. So let's say noon tomorrow would be a practical starting point. That would give him 5 hours tomorrow, and maybe the full 8 on the day after. That might be enough."
"So he won't come back for 48 hours, at least. I'm only guessing. I can't be sure."
"Even so, we'll have plenty of margin."
Seth Duncan said,
"He won't come back at all. Why would he? 100 people read that file and said there was nothing wrong with it. And this guy isn't 100 times smarter than anyone else. He can't be."
Nobody spoke. Seth said,
"What?"
His father said, "He doesn't have to be smarter than anyone else, son. Certainly not 100 times smarter. He just has to be smart in a different way. Lateral is what they call it."